sales and marketing are not the same thing, and nor should they ever be confused as being the same thing. And whether you have an online business or a bricks and mortar business or whatever it is you run and operate or want to, marketing brings them to your door. Sales invites them in.
Win all in, play my cards right. Up the ante, one blackjack all night. Roll the dice, let it ride.
This podcast exists because of the team at CASCM. At CASCM, we make content creation enjoyable. We are on a mission to help leaders create content, content that will improve lives, content to be proud of, content that fosters community. We know through firsthand experience how content brings people together, and we love helping make that happen. We produce podcasts, short form videos, blog posts, and other written works, while also providing support in website development, social media management, and strategic planning. And we would be excited to help you. Visit CASCM.com to learn more, or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. So you're up in Calgary a good bit.
I am in Calgary.
Okay.
Yeah. And you?
I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. So it's North Carolina. Yeah. So Flower Mountain, Texas, what's that?
Oh, it's just outside of Dallas. I have done a lot of work in the Dallas area for the probably last 20 years.
Okay.
And so at some point in time, I actually had an office down there, and I've never changed that on LinkedIn.
Okay. I looked it up. It looks beautiful. Like right in the lake there.
Yeah, it's just part of Dallas. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, a couple of my good friends and one of my former coaches actually used to live in Flower Mountains. So over the years, spent a lot of time there.
Okay, cool.
It's Dallas area.
Dallas. It's just a suburb or whatever.
Mm.
Maybe close to the water, kind of. That makes sense.
Yeah, golf courses and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I gotcha. So in another video I saw, you're in the Rocky Mountains and you were giving a presentation of some sort or a live video, but and you were talking, which I appreciate, that you're able to do that, right? Because that's the life you want to live, that if you want to be in the Rocky Mountains, you can continue working, you could take breaks, you could do what you had to do, but are you still going to the Rocky Mountains? You still have a place there?
I do. As a matter of fact, my wife and my youngest son are there for the next week and a half, maybe two.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm hearing it as I hear you talk more. I hear the Canadian accent, right? So I'm from Buffalo, New York. So I always say I could look out my backyard and I could see Canada. So we went over the Peace Bridge numerous times in the summer to get ourselves into some trouble. But so you're born and raised in Canada or whereabouts?
I am born and raised in Western Canada. I lived my whole life here. But 80% of our, and it's funny you say that with the accent. Pre-COVID, I was in the US, I don't know, three times a month.
Yeah.
Different places all over. And I never got that. COVID hit. We couldn't travel. All this stuff happened.
Yeah.
And apparently I've regained my quote unquote Canadian accent.
Yeah. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Are you a hockey fan? I'm not just saying because everyone plays hockey in Canada, which can be true. But again, being from Buffalo, being the Canadian side, the Leafs fans would always come over. We'd go there and all that. I love Canada. Spent, like I said, a lot of time, but.
I am a hockey fan. Played hockey when I was a kid. The interesting part of it is as you get older and you build businesses and you have kids and a family and obligations, I find the time investment into hockey is no longer there.
Yeah.
It wasn't intentional. I didn't wake up one morning and say, not going to watch hockey, not going to get, you know, there's playoffs or whatever. I mean, I'll watch nothing. But the last time I sat down to turn a television on to watch a hockey game was probably 10 years ago.
Yeah. Did your kids ever play hockey or get into it?
No, I discouraged it.
Yeah. So it's funny. So this past year, and I don't know if she'll play this year, but my youngest daughter was playing hockey in Charlotte, North Carolina, go figure. And it's a lot of families that were from the New England area, Canada, Western New York, you know, what have you, the Dakotas that are down in the South playing hockey. And as you obviously saw, there's a huge influx of people. But to your point about the time commitment that is required in hockey, the ice times, and, you know, in certain cities like Charlotte, North Carolina, Raleigh, Tampa, there's not as many sheets of ice. That becomes a real problem. But
oh, there isn't here either. And that's part of the problem. Never mind the cost.
Yeah. Ugh. Outrageous.
For each kid in each season, you invest about 25 grand.
Yeah.
And then you're up at 4 to be on ice at 5.
Wow. Even in Calgary.
Yeah. Even elementary school kids being on ice at 9 and 10 o'clock at night and having to be at school the next morning.
Yeah. So competitive. Is that one of the main reasons?
It is. And there's not a lot of sheets of ice.
Yeah.
Even here. Maybe it's because the amount of kids that do it, you know, because we are in Canada. But so my oldest son skis in the Rockies races.
Wow.
My youngest son just getting into it. They both are very active in a whole bunch of other things, soccer and taekwondo. And
awesome.
you know, all these things. So no rest for the wicked, as they say.
Yeah. You're going to find things to do in your spare time. But yeah,
I don't even know what spare time is anymore, my friend.
Yeah, I get it. Well, yeah, it's not spare time. I guess it would just be time. And it's wild too, because all of these things, there's businesses, you're talking about $25,000 to play hockey or what have you, like all of the skiing, I can imagine, is a significantly expensive sport, right?
It is.
But coaches and trainers and all that stuff. So it's just huge opportunity for entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs that have a passion for something. So if someone grew up skiing and they didn't become an Olympic skier, they didn't go work in, you know, one of the big skiing companies, they can become a skiing trainer. They can become whatever they want to become. And I think it's awesome. I think it's really cool that like people can have a passion and can get into that business in a different and a unique way that suits them. And then there's, how do you build that business?
Well, it's interesting. My oldest, he could technically teach, but because he isn't 16, they won't let him teach. He literally went to the ski school instructor who he knew he'd worked with for years. And he's like, can I teach? And the guy says, well, you could, except for you're not 16. So he decided to go to racing 2 years ago. And this past season, he came in fourth, and the season before he did podium. So
awesome. Good for him. Well, sounds like he's pitching himself, right, to be a coach, and he's selling. And it's funny because I was learning a little bit about you, and my business partner and I talk a lot about this. Like, why are people allergic to selling? Why do they hate it? Why is there psychology that's stopping them from sales? Like you having your kid, if you go to a restaurant, and your child wants to order something or needs something else from the waiter, the server, ask for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's sales, but it's communicating with people that you don't communicate with on a daily basis. It's a little bit awkward. And when you've never done it before, but I think sales has become this thing of, I think you say it's not a bad word.
Yeah, sales is not a dirty word, yeah.
Yeah, not a dirty word. Why are people just, it's like, they don't want to say that word out loud and they feel like I can't say that because I don't sell.
We live in a society, I think, where sales has been demonized, and I don't quite understand why, because every business is a sales organization. If you aren't selling, you aren't in business. Mm. The reality, I think, for anyone who is or wants to become, you know, has their toes over the precipice and wants to, as Bob Proctor used to say, jump off the building and grow wings on the way down into their own business, whatever that is, doesn't matter what it is. You can be the very best, you know, plumber or consultant or graphic designer, doesn't matter what it is. The reality of it is you have to sell. And I remember standing in front of, I mean, I've given thousands of presentations and different events over the years, but I remember I was in Reno, Nevada, probably 6-7 years ago. There was about 1,700 or 1,800 people in the room. And at the end of my presentation, they'd put up two microphones in the audience for Q&A. And this one guy came up and he said, I'm a coach. I said, hey, that's awesome. You know, tell me something. How do you enjoy coaching with this kind of thing? He goes, I hate it. And I said, well, why do you do it? And he looked at me and said, well, because someone told me I could make millions. And I said, well, how many clients do you have? And he goes, none. I said, well, have you asked anybody if they want to work with you? Have you, you know, had, do you have some relationships? He goes, yeah. He says, I hate people. And it's really interesting. And I told him, you know, stop coaching. This is not me.
Right. Yeah.
We'll find something different to do.
Yeah.
But the reality is there's a lot of people that they're good at what they do. Pick something, pick any profession, vertical industry, whatever it is. And they decide one day, hey, I don't want to work for this boss of mine anymore. I'm going to go do something. And so they make the decision and there's trepidation and they're tentative about making these big life-changing, life-altering decisions, but they eventually do it. And you know, as Michael Gerber talks about in the E-Myth, just because you can go incorporate a company doesn't necessarily mean you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And he says you're a technician suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. And there's truth to this because just because you're good at whatever you do, again, pick any profession or vertical, that doesn't mean you're an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is where you start to build, expand, and scale. So you take what you do and you start building a team so you can multiply it. The challenge for so many entrepreneurs, and there's two of them. One, they have entrepreneur syndrome. They don't want to let go. They want to touch every piece of paper, every email, every phone call, whatever it is that comes through the front door. And even if they hire somebody, they're micromanaging, looking over their shoulder. And when that person doesn't do it exactly the way they do it, they push them out of the way and say, oh, heck with this. I can do it way faster. And as a result, entrepreneurs, we as entrepreneurs, and not necessarily you or me, but any one of us, we limit our growth because there's only so much we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Use the word letting go. And it relates to sales and all that. And you use the story when you, I think you sold the business, right? Or you not sold the business, you hired a CEO.
I did.
And you showed up to work the next day and you were there. And the CEO says to you, why are you here?
There's an ego thing to there too, right?
Yes.
I mean, I built this company. I built it from essentially nothing to $9 million a year. You know, that's a pretty significant achievement. Most people on this planet will never, ever experience what I experienced at that point. And I knew that we could build more, but I knew I couldn't do it alone. And we went through the vetting process. It took a month and a half or 2 months, and we found the right guy, and we hired him. And, you know, the next morning, 6 a.m., I walked into the office, and I was hanging my coat in the closet, and he came around the corner, and he said, "Morning, Sean." I said, "Good morning." He said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Work." He goes, "Well, just remember one thing." He said, "You hired me for a reason. Stay out of my way." I mean, he could have reached out and smacked me across the face. It would have had the same effect.
Right.
Because, you know, this is my baby. I'm here.
Yeah.
And he was right. I want to be clear about this. He wasn't being disrespectful. He was 100% bang on. And it was very timely that he said that, because I probably wouldn't have changed what I did on a day-to-day basis had he not given me that proverbial slap across the face.
Mm.
And together, him and I took the company from 9 to about 133 million in the next 4 years, or four and a half, maybe.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I heard Derek Sivers, I don't know if you've heard of him, CD Baby podcasting, written books, and he said the same thing. He was like going away and he would call in and they would talk to him and it was really good. And then he would call in and again and, "How's it going?" They're like, "It's good. Like, would you need anything?" He's like, "We're good. Like, go do whatever it is you're doing. We're fine." And that was like eye-opening to him to say, I can go work on what else I need to work on. And so I think you use the word the ego. It's like letting go of that ego. And you know, I think in sales, going back on that, the ego gets in the way because we're afraid of being told no. We're afraid of losing. We're afraid of a lack of success. We're afraid of what other people might think. And, you know, letting go of the baby and all these things, it plays a part. And I think it all goes back to, like you said, ego. And I'm sure in the conversations that you've had over the years, there's just a lot of ego in entrepreneurship. There's a lot of ambition that gets in the way of it. When we talk about ego in that way, like what's coming to mind for you as you're sitting there?
My there's fear too.
Yeah.
Right? Because wherever you go, it doesn't matter. United States, Canada, UK, Western world, we've been conditioned and educated to go get a job, whatever that is, right? If you went to school for something or whatever, go do what you're going to do. Work your 8 to 4, 9 to 5, whatever it is. Go home and do the whole thing over, you know, the next day and just stay on the hamster wheel. And for those, that very small percentage of people who are dissatisfied and willing to do something about it, that's the difference maker. There are a lot of people that talk about what they want to do. You know, I speak at events, I go to events, I see people sometimes over and over. I remember I was at a real estate event a number of years ago, and I'd spoken there, and about a year and a half later, I was back, and some of the same people, "Oh, good to see you, Sean." And I said, "Well, I want to know what you've done in the last year and a half." You know, they're like, "Oh, building a business." I said, "Perfect. What does that mean? Have you gone and, you know, bought a couple of properties?" Well, we're working on it. And there's so many people that are waiting for something to happen, waiting for someone else to do something. Sales is a function of business. If you're going to be in business and successful at business, you have to learn how to sell. Now, people say to me, "Sean, I'm not a salesperson, I never sell." And I ask two questions. One, are you married? And two, do you have kids? One or both. Because at the end of the day, everything is sales. And if you want to go somewhere specific for dinner and you're going to have this conversation with your spouse, it's going to be a sales presentation.
Yeah.
All right. You've heard this, I'm sure. You know, most divorces start with one question. That question is, where do you want to go for dinner? And then it escalates from there.
Yeah.
Right. Because at the end of the day, no one wants to give an answer. No one wants to make a decision. Yeah. I want to go to restaurant A. Well, I don't want to go there. I want to go to B. And you say, okay, I want to go to B. And the other person says, well, I want to do what you want to do. And all of a sudden, we just see this thing go like this. And so when we start to understand what sales is only this. It's helping someone or a group of people see something from a different perspective that perhaps they haven't thought of or seen before.
Mm.
And when we look at sales, and a lot of times it's the word selling or sales, that kind of thing, there's a stigma attached to it. Sales is a conversation, but here's the challenge. When somebody hears the word no, they typically say okay and accept it. In the sales realm, when you're selling, I don't call yourself a salesperson, you're an entrepreneur, you're running your company, you still have to sell. The sale actually doesn't start until the first no. Until then, it's only a conversation. And once we understand that sales is something that we should be doing, you know, Dan Kennedy says that 70% of our time as entrepreneurs should be invested into business generation. Now, you can slice and dice any way you want, but a major portion of business generation is going to be sales.
Mm. Yeah. So you come on these podcasts, you're in media quite a bit, you're giving presentations. So you live a lot of times on the marketing side of things, right? Sales and marketing, they go hand in hand and all that. How do you differentiate the sales and marketing. The sales and marketing team, or just the process in general, as it relates to, yeah, just what we've been talking about.
Sales and marketing are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And nor should they ever be confused as being the same thing. And whether you have an online business or a bricks and mortar business or whatever it is you run an operator want to, marketing brings them to your door. Sales invites them in. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about coaching, one of the things we talk about a great deal, so I'm not a business coach. I'm not a marketing coach. I don't just talk about processes, procedures, mindset, whatever it is. Because at the end of the day, I can be the most incredible marketer in the world. But if I don't understand sales and how to execute, how to communicate, I'm going to fail. I can be the very best salesperson in the world, right? I can sell ice to an Eskimo at minus 30 and not worry about it. I'm good at what I do. I'm phenomenal. But the challenge is if I don't have anyone to sell to, I'm also dead in the water. So building a business is just like coaching in my mind, has to be very holistic. And I've been very fortunate and blessed over the past 25, 28 years to work with well over 12,000 clients. And it's all a holistic approach. It's not about sales, marketing, mindset, any of those other modalities. It's about all of them. Because in order to be truly successful in life, business, career, and relationships, you have to have a well-rounded perspective on what it is you want to do in order to achieve it.
Yeah. So that's where your clarity comes in. Because you talk about clarity, focus, execution. So just three words that come up quite a bit for yourself. So have at it. Like that's what you just talked on. Clarity, lead us down that path a little bit more.
I think a lot of people talk about, and we've been hearing about for, you know, a couple generations now, you have to set a goal. You have to have a big, hairy, audacious goal. You know, in the book, Good to Great, he talks about that. And that's good. But here's the interesting part of it. You need to have clarity of destination or clarity of where you're going. What does that really look like? You know, you've heard this line before. I'm sure if you don't know where you're going, how are you going to get there? So get really clear on where it is you're going. And I'll spend a minute or two on that. There's only one purpose for a goal, and it's growth. If you already know how to do something, it's not a goal. But a goal needs to be big enough to inspire, motivate, and scare you all at the same time. Once you've got past that and that feeling in your stomach, that's a good thing, by the way, it's considered growth. And you've got clarity, move to the next step, which is focus. Focus to the exclusion of all outside distractions. So this is a tough one for a lot of people, myself included, because there are always opportunities coming my way. And if you think about this, I interact with people all over the United States, Canada, some in Europe as well. And so people are always calling me or sending me messages or whatever it is with opportunities. Now, not all of them are really valid or even real opportunities sometimes, but some are. And for those people who are entrepreneur seekers or maybe like me, have a touch of undiagnosed ADHD, there's always something shiny coming my way. It doesn't mean I should jump into it or on it right away. And so truly successful people have a maximum of three areas of focus at any given time and a minimum of three sources of income at any given time. But I think it's really important for us to understand that. Now, I have way more than three things on the go, but I'm not hands-on with all of them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an important thing. And there's no limit as far as the second side of that one for a second. It's a minimum of three sources of income. And you can have 10. No one's going to say you shouldn't. So clarity, focus to the exclusion of all outside distractions. And so I get the question that when we talk about focus, well, you know, when should I expand or when should I take on my next initiative? And there's a reality to this. You really shouldn't take on the next initiative until the first one has proof of concept and can operate without you on a day-to-day basis. And the real test, I'll throw this in there, the real test of an entrepreneur is how long can you step away from your business for without it imploding? If you can go away for 30 days or 60 days and your business still functions, right? You've got a pretty decent business that you've scaled out. And then the last of the three you mentioned is execution. Listen, we've been hearing for years and years, we should go take action. And there's some truth to that. But it's about action on predetermined steps. So if we back the card up a little bit, I can go stand in the middle of any freeway, flap my arms like a bird, flaps its wings, and I've taken action. That doesn't mean I'm going to accomplish very much of anything other than getting hit by a car that's speeding. So if we understand where we're going and we reverse engineer where we're going, we understand what has to happen every year, month, week, day, and for guys like me, every hour. And then we say, what are those high leverage activities? What has to happen in those timeframes? And we start to narrow it down on what those activities are for us in order to achieve that destination we discussed. That's where you start to make a difference. And then the other side of the coin is we also have to know you can't grow, expand, or scale until you know what you shouldn't be doing. So in order for this to really, really be effective, not only do we need to know what we have to be doing in those timeframes, but also we have to have a list of what we shouldn't be doing and never do it.
Yeah. Yeah. On the focus concept, sounds like letting go is a big part of that, because you can't focus if you're, like you said, you can have multiple things, but then you can get lost in it, right? Because you're so attached to all of those things. And that's a hard thing, right? It's like letting go of like the story that you told when you're really not involved in the day-to-day of the business anymore, right? There's also just the letting go to say, if you want to achieve this, whatever your goal is, you have to let go in order to do the next thing. But I think so often we're so tied back to it to say, I can't do that. It's really hard to do that. And is that where someone would talk to someone like yourself, Sean, to almost give yourself the ability to walk away from it, to let go from it? And it doesn't mean it's gone forever. And that's why having a coach, you know, you talk about athletes have coaches, right? They have head coaches, but they also have swing coaches. They have shooting coaches. They have all of your skiing coaches that work on certain aspects of whatever they need done. But a business coach, life coach, you talk about that a little bit, but is it that's why it's important to have those people, be it yourself or someone else, that can lead them down that path of walking away?
That's certainly one of the reasons.
Yeah.
Human nature is, we're interesting, right? And until we start to understand some of the things you just outlined, the holistic coaching process is about walking hand in hand and side by side. You know, in this case with me, we're talking about to avoid potholes and collapsed timeframes. Well, what does that mean? That very simply means some of the things you just outlined. Yeah, how do I let go and how do I actually allow the company to do what it's supposed to do? In other words, grow, expand, scale, whatever that looks like. And how do I empower somebody? This is part of the leadership aspect of this. How do I empower someone to either do that or work hand in hand with me to do that? You know, the other side of the coin is we're interesting creatures even more so when we start talking about how we lead, because a lot of times we feel that our way is the only way. And it, in 99.9% of the cases, there are a lot of ways to get to the same destination, and it doesn't necessarily have to be done our way, but we have a hard time with that. That's a human nature thing. So the coaching is a couple things. One, it's helping you see what it should look like. It's creating that pathway, and this is where a lot of people get hung up. It's a three-letter word, the how. H-O-W is where a lot of people miss what they could actually do, and this is creating that how. So once you know where you're going, reverse engineering it, figuring out what those high leverage activities are, and then working together to execute on that. That's really what it happens. And there are always going to be challenges. There are going to things that come up that we don't know about today.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of that's baked in this is trust, right? Trust in, if you're my coach, I need to trust you. If I have a team of people and I'm going to let go, I need to trust them. When you hire the CEO, you need to trust that. You also need to trust yourself that you've made the right decisions along the way, that you can go away, that you can go the Rocky Mountains and sit out, that, you know, you want to go watch your son in the ski race. You don't want to worry about it. You want to put your phone away. So the trust isn't in just one other person. It's in all of it. You think about that word a lot, or when I say that, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, trust is definitely a necessity. I think there's a component as you build bigger organizations about putting checks and balances into place as well. And that's part of that component of trust and leadership, that you know that what needs to happen is happening. But yeah, you have to trust.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the challenge, I think, for entrepreneurs to let go is relinquishing that and trusting.
Trusting, that's going to...
100%.
Yeah.
For me, I've had good experiences and sometimes not. You know, I've had people do things intentionally that would harm the company, and not often, of course, but the average person is out there going to do their best. But in order to grow, you can't do it without trust.
Yeah.
100%. So part of that process of being able to have high-level conversations, vet the individual that you're going to work with, and then be able to download, delegate, and automate is a big part.
Good stuff. Two more things I want to touch on. The first one is productivity. It feels like everyone's a productivity master, expert, what have you. There's productivity tools just coming out of everywhere. You got Notion, you got Evernote, you got Microsoft, Google, you got Trello, like the list goes on of all the different tools that you can use. And they're all shiny and fancy and they're really cool. And you can put it, man, you got the old pen and paper you can use it. People that can help you with it. Listen to videos, podcasts, all of it. I say all of it because it really is everywhere. And I know you talk about productivity a lot, and you have your own thoughts on productivity, which I think is super important. So when I say productivity, where should we go with that? How should we be thinking about productivity?
Productivity is interesting. For the last two or three generations as well, we've been hearing that we need to become more productive. And the average person today in North America is productive only 4 to 24 hours in a day. And so one of the things that people ask is, how do I increase that, especially in my organization? First, you have to understand what productivity is, not just a fancy buzzword that guys like me throw around. The definition of productivity is any action step or activity that moves in the direction of your goal or objective. So is what you're doing or what your team member is doing, is it actually moving the needle? Is it moving in the direction of your goal or objective? And then we say, okay, well, how do we increase that? Well, we need to understand, and so many times I'll be called by somebody or referred by somebody, I'll go into a company and we'll look at their structure, we'll look at their team, we'll look at the, you know, and no one knows what they should be doing, right? You've got a receptionist doing sales. I was talking to someone the other day, he's got a receptionist doing sales. I said, well, how's that working out? He said, yeah, we're not getting any sales. I'm like, well, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Right? And then the other side of the coin is there may be people who don't actually understand what their obligations and responsibilities are. Yeah, we heard about job description. We want to understand on a much deeper level for those people, they need to know what is it that they need to be doing and what are they being held accountable for too. And so until we start to actually get clear on some of these things, it's very difficult to understand what productivity is. Productivity or lack of isn't necessarily always the team member's challenge. Sometimes it's, and a lot of times it's, it comes down from the top, you know, the ball rolls downhill.
Yeah.
So when we get clear on, as leaders, when we get clear on what productivity needs to look like, we can then work together. It's a collaborative, it's part of leadership to achieve a higher level of productivity. And I think that's a big part of it. And we can go into that depth, but that's a quick answer for you.
Yeah. So if you look at productivity, what are things that you're suggesting on the front end, at the basic level, or however you want to take that? I know there's not some like pithy answer that you might have right off the bat of productivity, but what are some things that maybe you should think of, or like you said, not think of?
Well, we talked about that a moment ago. If you really can go back in our conversation a little bit, if you know what those high leverage activities are that you need to be engaged in, but also know what you shouldn't be doing, that's the first place we start with productivity, because that folds into one, right?
Yeah.
If I'm engaged in something that is not going to move my whatever, my relationships, my company, whatever it is forward, I'm not going to see anything from this. It's non-productive.
Yeah.
So let's get really clear. What are those things that are going to high leverage? What are those high leverage activities? That's about productivity.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is if we start to eliminate those things, and I realize, you know, when you start a business, you're wearing a bunch of different hats and all that. But if you start eliminating those things that are non-productive for you, stop doing those things that are minimum wage jobs, right? I was speaking at an event one time and the conversation was part of the presentation. And I had a woman who's saying, it was Q&A after, she said to me, said, Sean, she says, you don't mow your own lawn, do you? I said, no. She says, you don't clean your own house. I said, no. She goes, you think you're better than us? And it's not about that, right? The whole audience wanted to know what I was going to answer. And what was interesting about that, when it was funny, she said to me, she said, Mr. Shuchuk, she said from the microphone, she said, I really wish that I would have found someone like you who would have married me and he would have just hired out so I didn't have to do all the work. And, you know, of course, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
The whole audience, you know, it's probably 1,500 people. And so, you know, and everyone wants to know what I'm going to say next because I'm on the stage, you know, with the guy with the microphone. And I got down on one knee on the stage and I said, would you join me on stage? Of course, the audience lost it and laughing, right? This kind of thing, because it was diffused the, you know, somewhat tense situation. But the reality of it is, I don't mow my own lawn. Right now, my kids sometimes do, but if they're away and doing a thing, whatever, but I don't clean the house and I'm not better than anyone, but it's not a high leverage activity for me.
Yeah.
And so we start to understand that what we're doing needs to be high leverage, and that allows us to do those things. You know, you talk about the Rocky Mountains and those, you know, going to, you know, games and skiing and all this and watching my kids. I've structured it in that way because those things are priority.
Yeah.
So if I'm engaging in these high leverage activities, I'm not doing those things that are not, right, productive. It allows me to, those things that are important to me, a priority for me.
Yeah. So you're finding ways to say no to the things that you don't want to do. Because someone could mow their lawn, even though it's not a high leverage activity, because they enjoy it. They get it. 100%. You know, they like being outside. Yeah. So, I mean, go for it. You coming on this podcast, and this is not the only podcast you've been on. You've spoken, like you said, in front of 1,500 people and many more. You do a lot of media production, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's your time, right? You're making a decision to, I'm going to put my time here. When you're looking at that from a productivity standpoint, you're appearing on this podcast, you're taking some time. We're talking about productivity. Why are you appearing on podcasts? Why are you getting on media?
So two things. One, there's no direct sell. I'm not here to sell anything specific. I look at it this way. The more people I have the opportunity to impact, the more people are going to want to know how they can augment their lives, their businesses, their careers, their relationships. And that's really what it's all about. And the second aspect of this, and I'll be very open and honest because some people aren't, we teach this. If you're going to go out and build some kind of a reputation, some kind of a company, some kind of marketing, you're by far better off to do one-to-many than one-to-one.
Mm.
A much better leverage of time.
Yeah. Is that the book, right? The multiple books that you've written? You know, that takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of time. a lot of audacity to say, you know, I'm going to put this book out there, but it's done amazing things for you. I know I've heard you talk about it. Like, where's the book coming from? And that was my last part that I wanted to get to today.
Yeah. You know something? You've heard this before. Everyone has a book in them. I'll say this to you. I wrote a book because I felt, one, I wanted to help people, and I'll share this within about 3 or 4 weeks of the book, maybe 6 weeks, I forget now, been a number of years. Book coming out, I received an unsolicited Facebook message from a young girl out of the UK, and she said, "Dear Mr. Suchak, thank you for writing this book. I ordered it from Amazon or wherever she ordered it from online, and I've read it 3 times and it changed my life. If no one else bought and read the book, honestly, it was all worthwhile." And there's a lot of people ask me why I do what I do. And I'll share this with you. Bob Proctor was my first coach many, many, many years ago. He wrote the foreword to my first book. And one of the things, he said a lot, I guess, but one of the things he said to me was, none of us are getting out of this alive. And he's right. And the other thing that I've been told is that, you know, when it is my time, let's be clear, I'm not looking forward to it anytime soon. I've got far too much left to do. But when it is, your life will flash before my eyes. If that is, in fact, the case, I want to make sure it's a movie worth watching. So it's about that ripple effect.
Yeah.
I'm not being paid anything to be, you know, on this show with you at all.
Yeah.
This is purely informational. This is purely about offering something that somebody's going to wrap their hands around. It's going to impact them. Will they phone me? Maybe. Maybe not. Will they go buy my book? Maybe, maybe not. But the purpose behind it is that, and that's really why I do what I do.
Yeah, I can tell. I mean, because you don't know, right? You talk to people, you see if someone's in the media a lot, you might think, oh, they're out there selling, they're doing this. And again, bad word, they can't be doing that. And it's okay to sell your stuff, right? You should be. You should be talking about it and having conversations, asking people to write a check or to nowadays to Zelle or Venmo or something along those lines. But to share that, to share what you shared today is awesome. And not to mention, when I talk to you, I now can go and learn about you pretty quickly on the different videos and podcasts and blogs and posts and social media that's out there.
Yeah, I've never worked.
It makes, right? But it makes the conversation, we can get right into it. It's like we've already met in a way. And so, Sean, I appreciate all this. Letting go, ego, trust, productivity. Where can people buy your book? I'm sure on Amazon, but you know, where can they learn about you? Where they can reach out to you?
Go to changeyourresults.com. You can click and find out more about me and all kinds of stuff. You click on, there's a link there for the store. You can see there's books and there's a journal and there's all kinds of stuff. Movies that I was involved in.
Yeah, very cool. Sean, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
In case you haven't noticed, we love podcasts. In fact, we love building podcasts, everything from development to production. Because of all that, we're building a one-of-a-kind podcast network. If you have a podcast or looking to launch a new podcast, then we should talk. You can message me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz or hit us up any way that works for you. Let's talk about your podcast joining this one-of-a-kind podcast network.